Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And as much as I, you know, say these words every time, it's welcome back and it's now or never. And as I guess as lackluster as they may come across, there is, you know, I truly am thankful that you're coming back, you're still listening, and that you're understanding more and more of what we need to do. There's no 90-second speech, but this isn't that hard, and I wish it. And I don't know what I'm struggling with. I'm trying to actually frame this out, because you can tell I do not sit down and type or have boom, 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 because I'm not an entertainer. But I can tell you that I've been working with a lot of people for a long time, going back over 10 years, and in some cases, 40 years, going back to when I got into the intelligence community. And we always talk about these conversations, and we had conversations of what, you know, government should be doing. We lived in a very naive time in the 70s and 80s, thinking, you know, this counterculture revolution, you know, was just that, a counterculture revolution. It was a bad thing, and it was a bad thing. But it got its toe in the door because it pointed out that government wasn't perfect. Now, people aren't perfect, and of course, government's not perfect, but we had no idea at that point in time how unperfect government was. And I give you this because if you really think in the 70s how good things were, we have no idea how fast and how effective the communist movement in America was spreading. At this point in time, it was still kind of close hold. But people within positions throughout already had the secret handshake. And I know that, because I need to get into the history of all of this, because this is really important, because actually I learned about the conspiracies at the very end of the 80s and really started diving into it. I spent a lot of money going into it I'd say about 1995 when I, you know, actually, because what I tried to do was I actually tried to read both sides of the conspiracy ideal, because believe it or not, there were people that were promoting the advantages of a globalistic world, of a globalistic government. Harlan Cleveland, if I remember correctly, was one of them. But anyway, As we were getting exposed to this, you know, it became very consuming. And as a matter of fact, I will tell you that I was consumed by the conspiracy theory easily over 10 years. I spent a lot of money on it, spent a lot of time. And I will say this, that I got pretty informed on the conspiracy theory. But one of the things that was consistent with all of the different theories out there, because very few of them have tried to actually take an academic approach. And as a matter of fact, I'll give you a good case in point, because I deal with a lot of brothers and sisters in the patriotic movement that we all look at the Freemasonry as a really bad organization. And as a matter of fact, I will tell you, and I'm going to do this specifically, so it just came to me, I need to pull up a document. So while I'm talking about this, I am going to try to, you know, help you understand that the Freemason organization was actually a good organization. It did good. It was a long time, you know, it was been on the earth for a long time, and a lot of good men got into it. And so one of the things that Satan does is he infiltrates good organizations, and I can prove this. He goes out of his way to infiltrate good organizations so that he can actually, you know, co-opt it, corrupt it, and control it. And so I'm going to Reclaiming the Republic. And what I want to do is just ask you to go to, and let's, I'll just start off with the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, because I think I have this document in two locations. And is it there? No, it's not there. So never mind. I'm just speaking to myself. It will probably be on the Constitutional Articles page then. And because it's at the very bottom. Yeah, and it is at the very bottom. And actually, it's a broken link, and I have quite a few. I got two of these that are broken links. So I need to go back and fix this, but I will. But the document you need to look at, and by the time this airs, I'll have this fixed. Circle of Protection Signatories. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because this document right here actually provides you all of the information necessary to start understanding how any good organization is under attack from the beginning or at a point when it becomes useful. And so Christianity, I don't think necessarily, Christianity was under attack in Christ's time. And the Romans were out to destroy it. And as we look at what the Romans were doing, then what they ended up doing is they co-opted it, because Constantine recognized, he doesn't have the Roman citizens as fanatic about him and Rome as the Christians are about Christ. And he says, our religion is inadequate because this is the religion we need to have. And which is, that's why he co-opted it. I mean, it makes sense, right? You want to have a better opportunity, and you want to have a better, I'll just say, what's a better word for it? You want to have a better mechanism. There we go. We want to have a better mechanism of controlling the masses. Now, the Freemason organization got penetrated in 1776. As a matter of fact, if you look at when the Illuminati was created, that's when it was wholesale permeated and penetrated and controlled or seized. But it wasn't fully seized at that point. That was the beginning. That was the first direct attack with Adam Weishaupt going into the Freemason organization. And oh, by the way, folks, they're advertising today. I mean, my wife was mentioned that she hears on some of the radio stations that she listens to, hey, you should be one. And the only way you can be one is to find one and ask them. And that's how you can't just walk up and say, I want to be a member. You have to actually kind of be proven to be worthy of becoming a member. But anyway, the framers were not secretive about their membership in the Freemason organization because it was a clout. For centuries, the Freemason organization actually did really good things. And they, hadn't been co-opted or corrupted at this point in time. And I'm here to tell you that really, when you look at when 1776, because I think I've mentioned this before, it's not like an email went out. So bottom line, when we really start tracing back how, America was framed and so forth, and anybody uses, because they make a direct connection, because, and I'm saying this because a good friend currently has had, these types of things brought up, and it happened with me too. But one of the things that really helped me, start questioning all of the information was because you first have to understand that the Constitution was divinely inspired, that it is the byproduct, which I appreciate Paul coming on and, coming out with his faith. I don't want, and I do not ask. I mean, if you're going to out yourself, that's on you. But my philosophy is that we all, if you're lovers of liberty, your works will show how you support liberty. And we'll call you out for it, because I know good hardcore Christians. If you meet some of these people, I mean, some of these organizations that are controlled oppositions are good hardcore Christians. Do I think that they're going to go to heaven? Well, it's not my place to judge, but I think that these guys are really righteous men. But they are being controlled. So what does that mean? You know, until they actually have that epiphany, until they've actually, you know, done what they've needed to do, is am I doing a good thing by constraining myself and doing only this work, or can I do more? Because I honestly think the Spirit would tell you, you can always do more. And I get told all the time that I could do more. Believe me, if anybody's listening to this, I can tell you there's a lot of people that do not listen to this show that tell me I could be doing more in doing Christ's work. And right now I don't have anybody, or there's hardly anybody. There's not enough people that is doing this body of work. And I'm not talking about a myopic body of work. I'm talking about waging the war for liberty and fighting back against the war of subjugation, this ideological civil war that we are basically being confronted with. And it is not a single issue. It is across the spectrum of liberty. It is very, very clear that the only document on the face of the earth, other than the scriptures themselves, that speak to and guide and protect mankind is the United States Constitution. So as I lay this all out, I'm just here to tell you that welcome back. I can't appreciate, I can't express my appreciation for your consistency and your hanging in there. But more importantly, as we go through this, you know, it is now or never. And the scale of the conspiracies, or I should say of the corruption of government, the corruption of politics, the corruption of business, the corruption of Christianity is so overwhelming that, you know, most people may be in denial on this. I mean, today there's nobody that will argue the Freemasons have been co-opted. Now, there may be people in the Freemasonry that haven't been exposed completely, but that's because maybe they're not trusted yet. But I will go through the signers of the Circle of Protection, the Mennonite Church, the Evangelical Church, the American Orthodox Church. This is the list I was looking for. The Global Alliance of Interfaith Networks, International Pentecostal Holiness Church, the United Church of Christ, Church of God in Christ, the Evangelical Covenant Church. I mean, I could go on and on and on. The Catholic Church, the Baptist Church. I could go on and on and on. We're talking about two pages, and I'm going to do it real quick because I can do it. I can tell you how many are here. And we are looking at 44 churches or faiths that are out there that identify themselves as separate faiths. Now, that's only 44 that I had, and I did this research back in 2013 when I proved that these churches would rather have their parishioners, the members of their flock, go to government with their hands out than to take care of them and administer them and feed them for life. In other words, go get your bread from government and become dependent on government, but don't forget what you get, you need to give a little bit to us. And, you know, there's reasons why all of this has happened, but I don't have the time to get into all of that. Suffice it to say that all of these problems, whether it be, you know, the corruption of the church, the corruption of the Masonic organization, the corruption of government, the corruption of businesses and so forth, folks, it ain't going to get better. Thus, it's now or never. It's only getting worse. Matter of fact, I had a great conversation right before I made this call with Cynthia Lee out of Dr. Lee out of off the West Coast, and I will say that, you know, when because she's going down all, I mean, she dives into all of these different things, and this is just awesome. We need the research. We need people to research this. We need subject matter experts. But don't forget, and she does not forget, she's a huge supporter of the solution. You know, what can you do in fighting the, you know, this evil. Well, you have to be a part of the solution. She's a big part of that. But she has plenty of other time because she, you know, can't do everything. She doesn't have a patriot organization where she lives. I mean, come on, California. So there may be, but they're all corrupt. I mean, most anybody that I can talk to that I work with, almost every person and body that I work with, other than the people in Wyoming that feel like they've got a good Republican Party, everywhere else I hear from every corner outside of Wyoming that the Republican Party is corrupt. I see it all the time. I hear it. I read it. I've experienced it. How they stonewall, how they do nothing that will really solve problems. And there's a reason for all of that. So one of the things that I really need to do, and I try to take these times as feedback, and so I got some feedback, and I want to kind of help expose this information to you. So what I first want to do is, you know, just talk about, because I know this may seem like, you know, stating the obvious, right? GR is just stating the obvious. Well, anybody can do that, right? I mean, most show hosts, that's all they do is state the obvious. One of the things that we have to understand in stating the obvious is that every organization out there is very susceptible, especially if there's money involved. If there's money involved, it is susceptible to corruption. And so when we look at, and what I want to do is, because over the past week, it has been brought up several times, you know, what do we need to do to have a constitutional county? And the understanding of a constitutional county. And what would it take? Because bottom line, I'm going to tell you up front what it takes to destroy a constitutional county. Because I don't know what the county was in New York, but I can tell you the city of New York and whatever counties it occupied, or county it occupied, was attacked by the people of New York. And I should say really by the affluent people of New York in the end of the 1820s. Because they were first attacked in moving away from being a constitutional county by creating the New York City Police Department. Now, today, we see NYPD, Fire Department, NY, FDNY, and all these things that, oh, you know, these are like demigods or semigods, and oh, you know, these are sanctuscent. I think I got that right. Anyway. And my point is this, that these are actually maniacal organizations. When you create an organization of government, now it's one thing if you really feel like you need to make sure that the organization you create, like an ambulatory care, you know, emergency care, if you want to create that, make sure that it's not something that will take away your rights. Why am I saying this? Because when you create a police force, when you create a professional sheriff's office and or a professional law enforcement office, you have created a little standing army. The framers were very clear, and you'll find this on the 14th of June in the ratification debates, and we covered this. And I didn't necessarily go into all the details this past time, but you can find, just look for standing, just search the word stand, and you'll find standing army pops up quite a bit in the Virginia ratification debates. It's posted on the website, so pull it in. Look it up. And you will find that when they're talking about a standing army, they are not talking about the U.S. Army or a military force. They are talking about the ability to execute the laws, not to repel invasions or suppress insurrections or to, you know, put down an invading army or vanquishing some foes. It is about executing the laws. And when you do this, all of a sudden, you have to figure out how to fund all of this and constantly fund this. As it was stated by a very astute group of people yesterday, as I was in Spokane proper talking with an election integrity group, and it was brought up, you know, how are we going to do this? And I kind of explained all of this, and they said the people won't do that because they, you know, they're too lazy. Well, there's a lot to be said with that. I mean, folks, if you want a constitutional county, you need to get everybody to say, yeah, we got to do this. And so here's the question. Can we go back to a constitutional county? Because in their day and their time, they didn't have professional forces, or they didn't allow the direction of, because the framers were clear with the militia or the military forces, it was always to be under civil control. And that was kind of brilliant in having that. But I think it also has to have not just civil control. I think it needs to have oversight by the people. And I mean, not the people, not the civil or, you know, the elected officials, or even in internal affairs within the execution organization, whether police force, what have you, whatever's doing the execution of the laws. And so if you want to create it, that you're going to have this group that's executing the laws like your park rangers, then there needs to be citizen oversight. We the people oversight. So this is why I point out, and we have this on, it's actually in the petition militia. Actually, I think you call it constitutional counties, or maybe it's still the unorganized militia. But this, the name has changed to petition militia, just because we want people to understand that this is a militia that has the force of the people by using petitions. And so this is why on this, we actually have a bunch of committees. Constitutional compliance is the key committee. You have, at a county level, you have to have a citizenry of understanding constitutional compliance and demanding that everything be complied to as far as the Constitution. Every part of our government, everything that we're paying taxes on is in compliance with the Constitution. Another part of this is the First Amendment Petition Committee. You actually have to be organized so that you know what's going on. And this needs to be organized at the county and across the state. So in other words, the state actually needs to have an apparatus. They actually need to have a sub-organization where they hire and pay people to just basically allow for the coordination and communication and everything else regarding First Amendment petitions. Because we have to not only hold them accountable, we need to keep track of all of this so that we can always go back to it. Because anytime, any way, somebody can slide and slither and do evil, if the opportunity presents itself, most people with a low character will do it. Even though they may know that, and this has actually been proven. You know, you can actually put a videotape on many adults, and you'll actually find that they will try, because, you know, Candid Camera did it all the time. They will always try to get away with something. Now, here's an interesting thing. They've actually done videotapes, you know, video recordings with children, young children. And you'll find that there's a higher percentage of young children that will be less likely to do the wrong thing if they were brought up right, because at this point in time, they hadn't learned that maybe they'll get away with it. They just know that it's wrong. That's what they've been taught. And maybe the real problem, because of what I just said, because they've learned they can get away with it. Maybe we just haven't created a society that is thorough enough or supportive enough to help everybody make sure that you're not going to get away with it. Because it's not about compulsion. It's about just doing the right thing. And we need to hold these folks accountable. So one of the things that came up was rights and so forth. So when we come back, I'll talk about the rights and the importance within regarding your rights within your constitutional county and so forth. And this actually, I think, is a Second Amendment argument when we come back regarding rights, the rights to bear arms, the rights to be a part of the sheriff's posse, those types of things that have been brought up. Anyway, we'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so, you know, I don't want to necessarily go after or attack anybody, but what I want to do is kind of help you start understanding that there are very specific things that need to be restored. And the elimination of professional law enforcement as far as police forces have to go away. The only mechanism of law enforcement should be your sheriff, a duly elected, accountable to the people. And the sheriff should actually have, and there's nothing wrong with the sheriff's department actually having, you know, centers, because as people grow and as we, you know, accumulate in mass in areas, in other words, population centers, then there may be an elevation of crime. The only reason there's an elevation of crime is because of our education system and the breakdown of our family, those types of things. The sheriff can't police that, but we, the people, can institute standards and policies in restoring those fundamental principles that will actually restore the family unit, law-abiding citizens, and so forth. Because the most important thing that we need to be teaching in the education system is the accountability of every citizen. You all have a responsibility to support the rule of law and to support the laws. And we all need to be enforcers of the law. And the sheriff is an elected official that, you know, will establish those and may delegate and so forth. There is a concept that you have a right to join the posse. Now, you have a right to bear arms. That is definitely a right. You have a right to bear arms to protect yourself. And you should have laws that actually allow you to use deadly force or stand your ground type of laws. You should. Any city, any state that takes away your right to be able to defend yourself, your life, your family's life, and your property. And you know what? I'm telling you, even your property. When we look at somebody that is actually coming onto your property and somebody says, well, that's excessive force. No. When somebody comes on your property with the ability to do damage to your property, they can equally, in other words, if you come out, they can easily use that weapon against you. It is a threat. I don't care if it's a machete or I don't care if it's a baseball bat and they're breaking and busting up your car or what have you, and they're on your property, you should be able to put them down where they are. Now, if you don't have that moral conscience and you have that good of a aim, you know, then boom, hit them with buckshot. Hit them in their legs, you know, with the bullets, of course. Disable them. If you have the capability, the problem is most people don't even have the firearms training to do that. That's why it needs to be in the education system. The education system should actually be teaching your children, you know, firearm safety, you know, basic marksmanship, fundamental tactics, yeah, of military, you know, operations capabilities, those types of things, so that they understand, you know, what to do. Now, we could be teaching children, you know, to social engineering, those types of things, and that's what we beget. But if we teach children and we as people in this society, if you don't want to be a part of a civil society of law-abiding citizens, then go. You don't want your children to be taught that? Get out of here. Because that's what we're going to teach, and those people that actually fight against that. And so let me just back up a quick second. It's not that that's what we're going to teach. The Constitution demands that that be taught, that that be done. Every state must do that. Do you think that's divine wisdom? I do. Because if you read Article 16 of the, or Article 1, section, subsection 16, or hold on, Article 1, I'm speaking too fast. Article 1, Section 8, subsection 16, which actually states, and let me pull it up here because it doesn't take me long to find these things. So when I go to Article 1, I go to Section 8, and I go down to subsection 16, it says, Congress shall have the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining, in other words, training the militia. In other words, they have the responsibility in providing for the organizing, so they should be able to give the sheriff, or actually the governor, the money so that every sheriff has the ability to organize the citizenry force for the county. This is what's supposed to be happening, folks. This is what's supposed to be happening. And because it's in the Constitution, this is why I talked about this on the constitutional positions of a constitutional president. A president would actually be demanding that these things be done. That, you know, we actually starve or get rid of these professional law enforcement people. I was blown away when Cynthia told me that a sheriff's deputy in California, you know, a salary is about $120,000 just because the cost of living is unbelievable. You know, but they're in harm's way, but doesn't matter. This should be the militia. And the problem is we actually have this problem of insurrectionists because the United States people are practically all in insurrection with the Constitution. They don't even know it. But more importantly, she points out that if they do overtime and everything else, they could be making $500,000 a year. Folks, did you hear what I just said? These folks in these, you know, city areas, in the metropolitan areas, because things are so bad, they're making or bringing home with the overtime and everything else, and that's not including their pension, all these other things. They're bringing home, or their taxable income is around $500,000 or below that, but up to that as a law enforcement officer. Now, I believe in supporting the law, and I believe in supporting law enforcement, but I don't believe in supporting an institution that instantly goes and tries to defy the Constitution. Now, how does that happen? The day you create a mercenary or a standing army force to actually have the job to police all of the people is the day they want, and they work in cahoots with those who want to disarm you. Because if you have a weapon, then you're taking their job away from them. They want to have a monopoly on all the guns. And they know that the more guns go into the hand, the more you don't have guns, the more guns go into the hands of bad players, and the more you need them. It becomes a self-licking ice cream cone. So what we have to do is we have to start understanding that we all have a part. If we all learn, you know, the law, what is a legitimate law? We don't even need most of the law. We don't need speed limits. We need safety. And we need to understand if you have an accident, regardless of whether you're going too fast, you didn't hit the brakes, it doesn't matter. You have full liability for that, for the damage of that vehicle, unless you have proof. It's one thing to have suggested speed limits, but to have them enforced So in other words, what's the suggested speed limit? They say for you to actually be safely driving on this road, you should be going this fast. Now, I myself personally have proven that I drive a vehicle that can exceed, you know, the corner speeds that are recommended and the road speeds that are recommended. But that doesn't mean that because I can do them faster, that every vehicle can do that faster. And the last thing I want is if I'm zipping through, you know, a nice round of bends and somebody else is doing that in a vehicle that is inadequate for that, and they actually create an unsafe condition to hit me, we both should be at fault if I'm speeding. Because I would not have been able to safely respond because I was going too fast. So we all have this shared responsibility. I don't want to create a no fault, but we need to move the shackles off of insurance company to say they don't have to cover the damages on your vehicle if you violate safety laws or if you violate those things that, you know, like if you get on a motorcycle and you ride it without a helmet, then if you fall and you break your head open, you die or what have you, the insurance company is not liable for that because you refuse to use the appropriate measures of safety. And that's all the insurance company needs to say. What are the, you know, if they need to list it, okay, helmet, elbow guards, knee guards, what have you, whatever they say is the reasonable safety measures for riding a motorcycle, you know, obeying the reasonable safety guidelines provided by government, then you go outside that and, you know, you've taken that risk. And if it doesn't pay off, well, that was the risk. That's why they call it a risk, right? So it is only an opportunist. It's an ambulance chaser that wants to make something out of nothing. Because if they think that they're good enough in arguing, which as far as I'm concerned, we need to start making crimes against that. We need to make crimes so that the lawyers cannot become parasites. We need to, because there are decent lawyers. I'm not saying that there aren't, but there's way too many that are get desperate. Why is it that there's so many lawyers that get desperate, folks? Because there's too many of them. There's too many that go out. And if you look, I know lots of lawyers that are actually doing something else instead of their profession, even though they passed the bar exam. They still couldn't get enough work, so they're doing something else. And they may still maintain that bar, but bottom line, there's way too many lawyers out there and lawyer firms and monopolies and those types of things. So the overall lawyer industry and the bar itself, the bar needs to be dismantled, be clear. And so the best way to actually eliminate the bar is by having your county court system not recognize the bar system. Which means that, okay, if I don't have to have a bar system, so why is the bar actually integrated into the standards of a judge and the standards of the law? Because it's a union that wants to protect itself so that they have this control. Now, the adage, the saying, only a fool represents himself, or whatever that saying is, that goes beyond, well beyond the Bar Association. But that adage actually does ring well because every time, and the whole point behind that is every time you have your position on the argument, you are stuck in your biases. Having somebody else that can actually, you know, see the bigger picture or see things in a different vein is a much smarter client, a much smarter person. Doing everything yourself. I mean, it's not that you can't do it, but the adage is true that only a fool, you know, takes himself as a client. Back to the constitutional counties, though, and back to the conspiracy theories, back to all of these things. We have, if you're not at the point where you feel that the Constitution isn't that cut above anything else ever on the earth, then I would just say, take a second, take a week, take a month, and read the ratification debates, read about the Constitution, and read the source documents of the framers talking about the forming of that Constitution and the brilliance. And then ask yourself, what's more important, enforcing the Constitution or allowing somebody to come along? Because once you're on that convicted side, once you've reached that level, I'll use the word testimony, once you have a full testimony of the Spirit that the Constitution is that special, then I go back to the church, I go back to the Freemasons, I go back to corporations, I go back to the medical industry, the legal industry. Every industry under the sun has become corrupt because money's involved. How much money's involved in the Constitution? How much money can you get and make honestly in demanding full compliance of the Constitution by using First Amendment? There's no money in it. You don't pay any money to do a petition. You can't be charged to pay, to petition somebody. But, well, actually, and that's not true. I do need to get into that. I've got a few minutes. I'll get into that in a second. The right of petition is not something that costs you money, but it does take your time. And we all know money is time. And to actually do all of this work takes a lot of time. Folks, the mess is big, but we have to get started piece by piece, inch by inch, life's a cinch, yard by yard, life is hard. So as I started writing petitions and working with other people and writing petitions, we're really close to having 10 now. I'm actually closing in on petition 8, and petition 8 is the legal jurisdiction, or actually not legal jurisdiction, it is the legal authority or the legitimate authority of legislative powers, because this petition basically closes down the ability for the Supreme Court and the executive to use anything, any mechanism that creates a legislative output. In other words, they cannot create law. They do not possess any power to legislate. So as you know, I was doing the medical freedom one, and I had to put that to the side because this petition is paramount. Why? Because in the medical freedom, John Roberts, I know I go after him really well, but I need to actually lay out the argument, which takes more time, and I didn't want to make that thing 100 pages. So we created the legal argument that actually kills everything. Because see, if I did it with medical freedom, I'd have to do it again and again and again for all of the overreaches of the court. So by creating a single petition that says you can't do that, now we can reference that and actually not just say it, but we prove it. We prove that they do not have any legislative authority. As a matter of fact, I go as far as to say, had the Constitution included the ability for the court to make a law by a ruling, the states would have rejected it like that. I'm so confident. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. When you read the ratification debates, folks, you'll actually hear that even the Federalists made they agreed with certain things that are absolutely like standing armies. They absolutely agreed. Even though the Constitution had standing army and was forbidding it, they all agreed. It's not like they were divided in many ways. I think that there were the nefarious folks that were just trying to retain powers, and they were trying to pick at the Constitution in any and every way they could. So, getting back into the constitutional sheriff, the right of a sheriff, and so forth, I've worked with Sheriff Mack, and I want to get back to this just really quickly. He used to have an open website where you could actually go through his positions on stuff. And previously, and I don't know if he's actually changed his positions because his website is closed down. Now you have to join to really get into. And it seems like there's far less in print on hardcore positions, and everything's video and opinion, which is why we offer a lot of print and a lot of content. I talk a lot. I read these things. And I tell you, don't take my word for it. Go read them yourself. you can sit there and listen to any entertainer tell you things and make you feel good about what they're telling you and tell you, oh, yeah, you can do this. You can get involved. Show me. Show me that, you know, that you can do those things, because if those things are enumerated, that those things can be done, then okay, great. But if not, then we actually have to rely upon what the law says. And when we look at how, because I do not know how each state had set up their counties and sheriffs, or I should say the territorial governments established and formed their counties and sheriffs, because if I remember correctly, the sheriff, when he needed to go after somebody, when he actually needed a posse, because 9 times out of 10, the sheriff, and he may have had a deputy or two, because sometimes he was, you know, not just fighting one person, he needed more, and or he needed to be in more places than once. And that had a lot probably to do with the failings of the school system. But bottom line, as the sheriff's force grew and he had to go after more people or a larger group, a gang, as gangs were forming, then he needed a posse. And the sheriff would actually, he may have had a standard group of people. I think that was wrong. I think there should have been a lottery. As a matter of fact, the best way to do it, because this forces everybody to understand their responsibility. Because the way the sheriffs did it, they took the easy way out. And instead of having, you know, a difficult conversation of why we all need to do this and educating everybody, they just go down the path of least resistance. And so I think this is one of the reasons why we are where we are, folks. When you look at, you know, the laziness of the people in saying, yeah, let's just hire some police to guard us. Oh, well, you've just created an entity that's going to want to take your guns and actually is going to want to subvert the essence of the Constitution. The Constitution basically says we, the people, will execute the laws of the Union. And law enforcement agencies that are not the sheriff themselves, that are, you know, framed within the constitutional framework, those law enforcement agencies are just a standing army. I cannot emphasize that enough. These are standing armies. They may be really great guys and they're in there for really good reasons. That's because they weren't taught. That's because, and you know what? I've actually read analogies from law enforcement, like the feminizing of America. There was an article that was written by a law enforcement officer that just talked about how people just became scarier and scarier. And the reason why law enforcement had to grow and grow is because of the feminizing of America. There's all of these great arguments, folks. But the bottom line is, you and I are responsible as citizens of this republic to do a certain duty. And we all have to do this. And, okay, even though I may be in the age group that cannot be compelled to do it, I did this. I served this nation. I served 20 years to the day when the day I stood on those YOLO footprints. 20 years later, I submitted my paperwork to retire. It took me a few months beyond that, but I'm a symbolic guy. And I like doing things. Oh, well, you know, it is the anniversary. I'll just go do that now, because I was planning on retiring anyway. So I did it on the day. When we look at all of our responsibility, I don't want you to think that I'm one that has shucked my responsibility. I have tried to shed, you know, those types of things or deflected them and put them upon someone else. There's never been a time, and yeah, there are ways and mechanisms that you can stay out of harm's way, but I can tell you, when you're in the Marine Corps, everybody's a rifleman. Everyone's a rifleman. And when you're in the militia, everyone is a rifleman. Everyone has this responsibility. And on a personal note, there was a point in time where I had to mention to some child, you know, because they were trying to, you know, go get their parents to basically absolve them, to say, hey, I'm your only son. You know, can you absolve me from this? You know, I don't want to go to war. I basically told that young man, I said, look, you know, the responsibility of a soldier, the responsibility of a sailor, the responsibility of a Marine, that's a sacred responsibility. And even though there might be a mechanism out of that, that doesn't take away your responsibility. You can use a technicality, some law, to protect yourself. But I think your parents would think more of you if you lived up to the responsibility. That person thought about it, and they withdrew their direction of doing that. And they lived to tell about it. And they've come back to me and thanked me for saying, thank you for straightening me out. I've had many young people come back and say, you know, you gave me the best advice I ever got. And, you know, that really makes me feel good. And doing good things, working for a living, you know, producing things, those are the most valuable lessons that we can be teaching our children today. You know, giving them money and then saying, well, you're going to go to school and you're going to get a certification and you're going to go work in a factory and you're going to be a slave or what have you. That's not teaching your kids to become productive and controlling themselves and actually being a member of a self-governing society. And we have a systemic problem in our government, in our households, in our nation. This is why, you know, single parenting is it's an epidemic, folks. Let me close on this because I only have 2 minutes. I love you. I love everybody that I work with. I love every patriot that is willing to take a stand. I know that the steps many of you take are not what we would call in the Marine Corps a full 30-inch step. But it doesn't matter. You're making progress because you're making that step. You're turning this on. You're listening to it. You're reading. You're actually hearing this stuff, and you're going and reading for yourself. That is probably the best service I can do for this nation, because don't take my word for it. I may be entertaining. I may not be entertaining. I am not here to entertain. I am here to challenge your paradigms. I am here to give you the facts, give you the information. And by all means, I get comments. Every once in a while, somebody will, you know, I don't want to say, you know, land base me, but somebody will come up with some information I didn't know. And it broadens my perspective. And I love that. You need to embrace loving that too. Find people that disagree with you. Find people that have alternate information. Find people that are informing you and expanding you. You know, it is always a person that rises and grows more and more when they're actually in a group of people that challenge them. If you have a group of sycophants, you will actually create this bubble of destruction. This proven every time. Any company, any person that just hires a bunch of people that are yes men, then they end up getting eaten up or actually knocked out of competition because nobody stated what needed to be stated. Nobody had the difficult conversations because they were just a bunch of yes men. I don't want fans. I am not looking here to, I'm your fan, and actually I'm your servant. And every time we sign off, I always say this, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.